Allen Hurns. I want more of them. I want more guys like him.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. You do love Allen Hurns as a player. And
what's not to love?
I'm not arguing with you. You came in here today. You said you take five more of him, not meaning you want five more receivers exactly like him, but you just want guys that, as Gus Bradley was describing in that clip, maybe banged up. He shows up for work. He gets the most out of his ability. He's always prepared, and he comes through.
And those are the guys that you got to have, you know, week in and week out, that come to practice hard. They play hard. They fight through injuries. They're consistent. They're reliable and tough. And that's Allen Hurns, you know. And one of the things that really impresses me about Allen Hurns is not the ability to catch the ball and score touchdowns and get yards. It's that he does everything you ask of him. When you watch him, when he's not getting the ball and he's asked to block right around the edge or in that box area, he blocks just as good as anybody that I watch on film. And I'm talking any wide receiver in the National Football League. He gets it done. And if my statement in the game was, give me more of him. Give me guys like him that are up front playing defensive line. Give me guys like him that are playing offensive line. Give me guys like him that are playing in the secondary. And I'm not trying to criticize others and say that they don't have it. I think some other guys do have that. But the more players you have like Allen Hurns, you talk about changing the culture. That's what you do to change the culture. You find guys like Allen Hurns.
Jeff, is the biggest issue with this team that week to week we don't know what the biggest issue with this team is going to be? You know what I mean? Is it that, you know, Gus Bradley talked yesterday, and we'll hear extensively some of the comments that he made, but he talked about red zone, getting it done, and hadn't been able to get it done, cleaning up the field goal game, cleaning up the penalties, right? Three penalties. They didn't have many field goal opportunities, but they made them. And
yeah, but they still had two penalties that were mental error.
I'm not denying. Can't write, but overall,
not like you write them off. Okay, that's solved.
But down from 13 overall penalties is a much better move in the right direction. And clearly, they were very effective in the red zone this week. But as you talked about, they couldn't stop Doug Martin. A whole new set of issues cropped up.
Yeah, and then one of the big reasons for that was, you know, no Paul Posluszny. And I'm not trying to say that that's the only reason why. I mean, there's more to it than that. But not having Paul Posluszny, who is an excellent run defender, who is the captain of the ship on defense, who gets everybody lined up. And I know it's kind of hard to see because you're here in studio and you're watching on television and you don't get the all 22 shot prior to the ball being snapped. And it's hard for people to get a feel for that unless you're at the game. Like, I mean, so many thousands of people were from, you know, the Bold City Brigade and other Jaguar fans. But you could see that there was a lot of late communication. There was some late alignments, heads that weren't on the ball or at the line of scrimmage when the ball was snapped. And that's what you miss when you don't have Paul Posluszny. On top of that, the performance. You know, Thurston Armbruster, I think he's a good young player that has promise. He plays well on special teams, but he's not Paul. You know, and you can't expect him to play like Paul. And he didn't have a great game, but nor did anybody else up front. You know, when you talk about playing a gap scheme, everybody has to be in their fit. But when everybody is not in their fit, sometimes you play what they say above the X's and O's, which means somebody makes a great play, and even though one guy screwed up and has not been in his gap, you overcome it because a guy made a heck of a play. And you had too many instances where you had a few guys out of a gap here or there, but nobody was rising above the X's and O's up front. And that front seven, and Jonathan Cyprian, one week after having a marvelous game the week before at Indianapolis, had a subpar game.
What do you attribute that to, though? I mean, look, we got to get beyond the point saying he's a young player. He's in his third year now.
He's not a young player
right
anymore.
He's been around. He started a bunch of games in the National Football
League.
He's
right in the prime of his career. I mean, you know, there was two plays that I can remember that he was unblocked and didn't get to the ball. You know, when you're unblocked and you're the eighth guy in the box, you got to make a play. You know, and make a big play. Now, I give credit to Doug Martin. You know, we were on the way to the stadium, and Vaselli and I, you know, we sit on the bus right basically next to each other. and we were talking about Doug Martin, and I said, he's a heck of a player. And he said, ah, no, he's not. He's kind of average.
I heard you bring that up on the game broadcast. Yeah.
He's not average. You know, he might have been below average last year and the year before that, but you go back to his rookie year when he had, I think it was 1,926 total yards of offense. Tremendous player. And if anybody watched that game and thought that he was not a tremendous player, I don't know what they were watching, but he's a heck of a football player. He's incredibly strong. He makes very good moves. And I thought Dirk Koetter had a marvelous game plan for the Jaguars. But that game plan doesn't happen unless Doug Martin is able to dominate. And he did dominate. There's no other way about it. He dominated that game.
All right, we will get to more on looking back at the Jaguars through your eyes after watching the film yesterday and who maybe performed a little bit better than we thought and maybe who didn't as well. And we'll take calls throughout the course of the next 2 hours as well with Jeff Logman, Fat Tony, and myself here at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line if you'd like to get in. Today's question of the day, I was running out of ways to ask, I felt like we're asking a lot of the same questions, and so we kind of decided to switch it up a little bit today and look at the broader picture in the NFL and talk about the 5-0 teams that are out there, and among the undefeated teams, which one has been the most impressive. And we've had votes for multiple different teams already, so you can weigh in on that if you choose to at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, LOGS56, and at 1010XL Fat Tony on Twitter, and also the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll hear extensively from Gus Bradley as he met with the media yesterday. No changes coming, at least for now, to the coaching staff or any of their responsibilities. Doesn't look like any personnel changes as well. One thing that did come out, or a couple things, but the one thing of note, Bernard Pierce is in the concussion protocol, which may explain why he all of a sudden did a 180 on a punt coverage and turned around and started blocking for the return man.
So I actually showed that play last night on Jaguars All Access, and I've never seen anything like it. And it's one of those Jim Marshall moments, you know, where Jim Marshall picks up the
ball. Wrong way, Marshall.
And runs the wrong way. It's happened in basketball many times where a guy gets a rebound on the defensive side of the court, and then he throws it back up to score for the opponent.
Right.
You know, it was an extremely embarrassing moment. And you know, during the game, you watch the ball. You know, so you're not watching Bernard Pierce, one player on an 11-man unit.
Sure.
Cover the punt. And, you know, after the game, you know, you watch the film and you're sitting there and you're going, okay, what is he doing? You wind it back and you go, oh my, oh my, really?
Right.
And my hope was that he clearly had to have some affliction. He had to have been concussed.
Right.
And if he wasn't,
right. We thought, Tony had said yesterday, we were talking about who's the one guy that may get cut, if you're going to cut one. And, I think Tony said that Bernard Pierce would top the list as far as
he was
concerned.
When you have a play like that, I mean, you better have a reason for it.
Right. And he may, in fact, have a reason for it. I mean, he's in the concussion protocol. We don't know.
Look, all I know is that he did a great job of blocking DJ Swearinger, who was the outside rusher, because Bernard Pierce is the left wing on punt coverage. And that 58-yard punt return, it went right down the numbers on his side of the field, which is his lane, you know. And I'm sitting there watching him going, I wonder what DJ Swearinger is thinking right now when this guy on the punt coverage team is trying to block him. He's probably going, oh, my.
Right. He probably had no idea.
Block I've ever had in my
career. He probably didn't even think about it at the time. He didn't have time to think what was going on. All right.
Keep faking it like this is what he's supposed to do.
Yeah. Let me act like I'm covering.
All right. Let's take a break, guys. 641-1010. Phone lines open to you. You want to get in with Professor Logs? That is your avenue to do it. With Fat Tony, with Jeff Logman, I'm Mike Dempsey. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Who's Mike Dempsey talking to at the Metro Diner chat counter? Find out on Jaguars Today. 10 to noon weekdays on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Metro Diner, where the locals eat. Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today. 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I don't know what to say. Still painful watching that tape. You know, got a lot of things to go over. You know, I think there's some issues that we need to get corrected, obviously. Different issues than maybe would have shown up, and maybe a different way of handling it with our team in the team meeting.
You're going to see or hear from Gus Bradley, I should say, coming up here shortly. A couple of things watching his press conference yesterday, Jeff, that stood out. 25 to 30 missed tackles in the game for the Jacksonville Jaguars, according to Gus.
I think 23 was the number he put on it.
Is that the... Okay, I thought he said in the press conference 25 or 30 or whatever the number is. But
yeah, either way, so when you get in the 20s, it's
over 20 missed tackles.
High. But, you know, and a lot of that goes to and give credit to Doug Martin. Not only was it missed tackles, he ran through tackles. He made guys look bad. He ran through them. He carried them. He juked them. He did everything you could possibly do as a running back. You know, after watching that game, you're going sitting there going, man, is this guy Le'Veon Bell? I mean, he was that good in that game.
But don't you have to be bad? Even though he was very good, when you get a body on him, you got to find a way to bring him to the ground, right?
The issue is that you had kind of levels. You know, first of all, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that were playing without Logan Mankins, who is one of the top three guards in the game. He had a backup there. You had a backup center in Joe Hawley, who Joe Hawley has been a kind of a journeyman. He's a backup is what he is and always should be a backup. You would think that you would play better up front with your front four or your front seven, however you want to consider that. You know, include the two middle linebackers, fine. If you want to consider, the three middle linebackers, period, that's fine. But when you watched it, and I made note of this during the game, the ball was actually on our side of the field. In other words, I had a straight look down the line of scrimmage on a couple plays, and they were moving the line of scrimmage. And so you move the line of scrimmage, and then all of a sudden you have linebackers that are slow to read, because Telvin Smith didn't have a very good game either, along with Armbrister. And then all of a sudden you have the linebackers at a different level. That creates a lot of running room. There was nothing to disrupt the initial momentum of Doug Martin. And then once he got through that initial level, then all of a sudden you have linebackers at a second level, which even allows him more running room. And then you have guys that are unblocked that don't see Doug Martin. Now you have even more running room. You know, so, I mean, it was a combination of all of it. The disappointing thing to me is that, you know, last week or the week before against Frank Gore, against a subpar Colts offensive line, you showed them for what they were, which was subpar in the running game. Now, you didn't take great advantage of them in pass protection and have a lot of pressure on Matt Hasselbeck, you know, which we talked about here last week. You know, but this week, you didn't show what you showed all year, and that's being incredibly strong at the line of scrimmage versus the run. And that's a problem, because the Buccaneers' offensive line is not very good. You got a rookie left tackle who doesn't have great feet. You got a backup left guard, a backup center. The right guard was the highest drafted rookie ever in Division III history. And what was his name?
Allie Marpet out of Hobart.
And then a right tackle who Gosder Sherliss is not a strong man. I mean, the reason he's bounced around from Detroit to Indianapolis to being out of work to eventually getting a job at Tampa Bay is that he's not a high-quality player. And so to have that happen, I know, and that, first of all, they should be embarrassed. They should be disappointed, and I can tell you they are, because that's not the front that they play when you play essentially three defensive tackles or four defensive tackles across the front and run defense, and you have that happen, that's not good. And that should be the strength of this football team. Tyson Alualu, Jared Odrick, Avery Jones, Roy Miller, those guys are better than that. That was the most disappointing thing to me in that game.
All right, let's get some calls in here with Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars, today on this Tuesday, 641-1010. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, and we'll start with Phil first up today on 1010XL. Hi, Phil.
Hey, guys. This kind of ties to what Gus Bradley said about kind of being a little tougher with him and being a little different in terms of the way he does things, although I don't think he necessarily should have said that. He should have just done it. But what I have to say is that I noticed over the last few years what he says and what the players echo is, you know, we just have to improve our process and make the process work and all those things. I think in any job, any profession, at some point you need someone to tell you directly and have it out to the public if it's a business like football, is we need to win, you know, and have it be very overt, because it's like a psychological barrier. You can always fall back into a comfort zone if someone's telling you just to improve the process. But if it's like, we have to win, and then if you fail, you failed to win, then you work even harder. So I think that, I mean, I think that's important for that to change also.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into the psychological aspect of this. You know, what's Gus Bradley's message? Well, you know, look, all I know is one thing when it comes to Gus. I was very happy to feel, to see, and to hear the disappointment, the anger, whatever you want to call it. Because to me, that signifies, and you know, and I said this last week, that what Gus says to the media might be a little different, or it might be said in a different way to the players. The words might be exactly the same, but the body language, the energy, and the tone could be completely different to the players. And I've always appreciated Gus in that he is consistent, he is what he is, and you see exactly what he says to the players. But it was good to see the body language, because, you know, the expectation levels have to increase. And I could feel that the expectations weren't met through him. And sometimes as a coach, you got to show that. I mean, it's not about, okay, I'm changing my tone of the players, okay? Because sometimes, you know what the players do? They watch Gus Bradley's press conference on Jaguars.com. They watch Gus Bradley's press conference and the highlights of it in the evening news. They read the clips that Gus Bradley was disappointed and he was angry and he had a different tone about him. The players, you know, they see that. They read that. You know, anybody player that says that I don't read and I don't do this, I don't pay attention to that, they might not, you know, on a direct basis, but on an indirect basis, they're going to get the feedback on it. So I think it was great to hear his disappointment, because the expectation levels of that performance weren't met. Not even close. Not even close. Now, in certain areas, they were. I thought that the offense took a step up. Now, the turnovers were a step back. And the inconsistencies at time, inexcusable. But I thought that the quarterback played well. And the best part about his performance, there's still more left on the table. He wasn't perfect.
Right.
More left on the table, and I pointed out a couple of them last night on Jaguars All Access. He had Allen Robinson on the one play where he threw the interception to Mercedes Lewis. First and foremost, let me say this. Stop throwing the ball to Mercedes Lewis, okay? I've had enough of that, okay? He's a blocker, okay? Keep him in the box and let him do what he does best, okay? That's just me. You've got Julius Thomas and you've got Clay Harbor, who are viable receivers. And all this, we need to get the ball to the tight ends. We need to get the ball to the tight ends. No, you don't. You need to get the ball to the guys that can make plays when they get the ball. That's not Mercedes Lewis.
Right.
That is Julius Thomas. That is Allen Robinson, which on the interception, Allen Robinson was running open across the middle. And the other thing that I had a problem with on that play, Toby Gerhardt's the running back. You got Mike Jenkins coming off the edge. Now, Mike Jenkins is a buck 85. Toby Gerhardt's 230, 231. Put his face in the grass and rub it in, okay? And allow your quarterback time to sit in the pocket, scan the field, and not make a forced rush throw to Mercedes Lewis to where he has time to look, and all of a sudden, okay, there's Allen Robinson running across the middle wide open.
Mash his face into the grass.
I think I said that during the game.
I think you did. I think we just heard that. Let's get another call in here before we go to break. Let's go to James next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, James.
Good morning, guys. It seems like we're back again trying to come up with ways the Jags can lose. Jeff, I disagree when you say that we're better than that. I'm not really sure where you're getting that from. We're 8-29. I was at the Tampa Bay game. They threw us all over the field. We're 1-4. You know, the Bortles improvement and this and that. You just spoke about Gerhardt. Well, Gerhardt caught that interception missing a block. All 230 pounds of them let that guy get close to the Bortles. I think we need to say it like it is. We're terrible, and we're not going in the right direction, period.
All right, thank you, James. That's James' opinion.
I don't have a problem with anybody's opinion. They can express their opinion all they want. But my point is that they're better than that. You're going to allow Doug Martin to rip off, you know, 160-something yards of total offense. When are you telling me that Indianapolis and Frank Gore are that much
worse? Right, right.
No. So, James, take that and stick it up. You know what? Because that's why I say that they're better than that. And if you can't understand that, then you don't have logical thought about your brain. And I can't help you there. I can't help you. Okay? To sit there and say that I think they're better. Okay, the quarterback has taken clearly steps up. Okay? Are they better than last year? Whoever gave this team a chance to be able to come back from two scores down at the end of a ball game the last 2 years, you know what our thought was in the booth? The last 2 years? Game over.
Yeah, 10-point lead at any point. The game was over, pretty much. Yeah.
Do you not see that, James? That they came back? To have that psyche and to bring up Gus Bradley's overall record is idiotic. It's dumb. Yes, James, I'm calling you dumb.
Loggy is channeling me, Tony, this morning in a scarily accurate
way. I don't know how else to tell you, because you know what? And I said this last week. You can't sit there and say, okay, in year one, okay, they should have been better than that. They completely wiped this building to the ground level. And last year, they tried to add some pieces through the 2 years of building through the draft. Okay, when you wipe the table clean, that doesn't work. Okay, that doesn't work and have expectations all of a sudden, well, we're going to be good now. No, it's a process that has to happen. Okay, and this is the first year that they delved into free agency to add key components to this football team after 2 years of building through the draft. Now, am I saying that this team is better than 1-4? You're damn right they're better than 1-4. They should be 2-3 at minimum, maybe 3-2. So to sit there and you want me to change my opinion and sit there and say, okay, well, this football team, you know, they stink? Well, right now, yeah, they do stink at 1-4.
The record says, right.
But I'm saying is that they're better than that, okay? And they should be better than that. 2-3 or 3-2. But I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they should be 4-1 with a second-year quarterback who just completed, maybe his 18th start in the National Football League? I mean, put on your teal-colored glasses a little bit, okay? Or your regular glasses would do just fine, and look at the game and see it for what it is. And that you have a young quarterback who is showing signs for a reason for excitement. And if that doesn't excite you, I don't know what to tell you.
We got to take a break. We're at the bottom of the hour here. Our pass is 641-1010. If you'd like to get on and pick the brain of Professor Loggs, he is not putting up with anything this morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. We're here from Gus Bradley coming up shortly as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars Today rolls on, and coming up in a little bit, we'll let you hear directly from Coach Gus Bradley. Let Loggy weigh in on his thoughts on what Gus had to say yesterday at his weekly Monday look back at what happened in the Jaguars' latest game. But right now, we've got phone lines open to you on a Tuesday, brought to you by the losses of Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today here live at Everbank Field. Joel, thank you for hanging on. You're on with Jeff Loggman. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so this is what I have to say. I know we have one player left over from the Gene Smith draft in error. The whole roster has been completely revamped, everything. And I get the fact that Dave Caldwell and Gus are not out there missing field goals, missing tackles. They're not the ones doing it. But these are their ingredients. So, and I'm not saying, obviously, they're not completely to blame, but at what point does it fall back on them? Because this is their team. It's nobody else's. So at what point would you say it all falls back on them? Is it a record number, or is it, do we get to 500? I can't even see 500, but what point does it fall back on the two of them?
Okay, thank you for the call, Joel. What do you think, Loggs?
Like I said before, you can't sit there and say, okay, we've got a five-game capsule, let's make a final grade. It's not the way it works. You know, let's play 16 games and see where it's at, and then at that point, then you evaluate.
All right, and that's your point of view, and that's fine. What about the fans who say, you know, they're the ones who elected to go this young, and they didn't have to rip the roster down to this level? That was a choice that the organization made.
Absolutely, and I agree to some extent that. I did not disagree with the way that they dismantled. I think that when you dismantle, you have to be able to have certain components across the board that allow you to build in a better way. And what I mean by that is that, and I'm not saying every position group needs to have some type of veteran presence, but you have to have not necessarily building blocks, but building aids across the board when you are changing the culture and you are changing the mindset and changing a roster up. You know, that's much like Chuck Pagano. You know, when they made the transition to his status in Indianapolis and that program, they kept some key components from what was left. And then they brought in their own, and obviously hitting on a quarterback was a big part of that. And I wish that they had had a little bit stronger veteran presence at the onset to allow them to have the race to maturity happen faster, to use Gus Bradley's term and Dave Caldwell's term, the race to maturity. I think maturity happens better when you have players that have been there and done that to help that immaturity get there.
All right, moving along, let's go to Greg. Thank you for the call, Joel. Greg, you're next up on 1010XL. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, guys? You know, I'm beginning to get more angry at the fans than the team because no one expected these guys to go undefeated. Not even many of these fans expected them to do 500. I'm not totally upset with the team. I'm more upset with the fans. Yeah, everybody got their opinion. But this season, I think the AFC South is more open in any other year, seems like to me. Nobody's playing this football. So, Jags, the season's not over. They got 11 more games to play. And, it, you know, the AFC South, I think, is just wide open for anybody to win it.
All right, Greg, thank you for the call. I think that's part of the main frustration with Jag fans. They look up and they say, this is the most vulnerable we've seen the Colts in a while, and we let them wriggle off the hook. And I think everyone in the division is saying that at this point. Tennessee had them down by two touchdowns pretty late in that football game.
Should have won that game.
Right. Should have won that game. Houston let them, you know, do what on a short week when Hasselbeck didn't even practice all week. We found out
because the Colts, they controlled that game through and through.
They did. Once they made the interception on the opening drive, it pretty much went in their favor.
Exactly.
But regardless, and I don't really care if Houston and Tennessee are kicking themselves about it, but I think that's what feeds some of the frustration is, man, it's not like the Colts are 5-0 and we were never going to catch them under any circumstances. This is a year where you feel like if you had just won that one, just that, even if you lost to Tampa, which you didn't want to do, but you'd be 2-3, the Colts would be as well, and you'd have the tiebreaker of them. You'd be sitting in first place. As sure. Ugly as it's been, that's a vast difference.
That's what I'm most disappointed about. You know, it's not about, okay, it was 1-4. Look, I want this team, and I think they should be right now 2-3. You know, could they be 3-2? Sure. But 2-3 was minimum expectation for me after these first five games. And that, to me, is the disappointing thing. But is that make me going to, you know, make a final judgment on everything that's happening and saying, oh, man, you got to be kidding me. They lost one game out of those two that they should have won. It's time now for everything to just end, blow it up, let's start over. No.
That's where a lot of fans are at right now.
Yeah, you know what, though? That's not where they need to be.
Well,
you know?
All right. I mean, that's...
See, what that is, that's an emotional...
Sure,
I consider that a knee-jerk reaction.
And typically, you
have that only on Monday.
Well, we do get a lot of it, and it does calm down a little bit, but there is a growing amount of people that go into the week, I think, feeling that way every week. I mean, I don't have numbers. I don't run polls. You know what I mean? But Tony and I are here every day talking to Jaguar fans. We talk to them on social media. I know you talk to them as well. I know you sense it out there. There's a growing discontent with the current situation that we expected to be further along at this point than we are, I think is a fair statement for Jaguar fans to make. And for them, I mean, look, again, I get it, Jeff. They're paying their money. You know, they've been here, and they can hear, hey, you know what, this is only 1-4. But they're saying, you know what, this is Mike Mularkey got two wins. This is on Dave Caldwell's watch. Then you got four wins. Then you drop back down to three wins last year, and you're off to a 1-4 start, and you're blowing games in large part due to mental errors. I'm just talking, this is a perspective that I hear, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're paying, you're asking us to pay the full freight. You're not giving us we're in rebuilding mode discount here. You know, I mean, that's part of it. We're going out here.
I don't have a problem with that.
That's fine then, because I think that attitude is pretty prevalent.
Yeah. I mean, people are entitled to their opinion. And look, even James is entitled to his opinion. You know, I don't have a problem with anybody's opinion. But the only thing that I have a problem with is that sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees. You know what I mean?
Granted, but and I think on the counterpoint to that, it's they're saying, look, we've been told that, you know, it's coming. This is a learning experience. We hear about it. We're going to learn from these mistakes. When are we actually going to then take the lessons we've learned and bring them to the football field? Right.
We're going to find out.
And I guess there some fans' tolerance levels are shorter. They've had it by now up to here. And, you know, I understand your point of view as well. You're going to wait till the season plays out. Look, I personally don't think there's much of anything that's going to cause Dave Caldwell to make a move on Gus Bradley during the season this year. That's me. I could be wrong. I don't know. They lose 50-0 the next couple of games. Maybe with the bye week coming, I'm misreading the situation. I don't think they're going to lose 50-0, but you know what I'm saying. I think it would take something pretty extreme. I am getting into hypotheticals. Well, that's what we do in sports radio sometimes. Let's get Noreen, who I think is on the opposite end of the pessimists, joining us next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Noreen.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I'm just stupid enough to be wearing my teal colored glasses. I am a season ticket holder, a long-term season ticket holder. I go to every home game. Unfortunately, I cannot get to every away game, but I'm just crazy enough to support Blake Bortles, Gus Bradley, and our teal colored Jaguars, Go Jags, every single game. Yes, I'm disappointed when I go to the home games and see them lose. Yes, I'm disappointed when I watch their games on television and see them lose also. I'm tickled to death every time I see them win. But you know what? Just like Mr. Loggeman said, we are a growing team. We are not a college town. And sometimes I think that's the mentality that we have. We expect instant gratification with this growing team, and that's the issue. We are an NFL team, and it's going to take some time to rebuild what we have. And that's what I think the Jacksonville community is missing. And we can't just throw everybody under the bus because we've missed a few games and because people have made mistakes. So I appreciate your comments. You guys are doing a great job. And thank you, Mr. Loggeman, for continuing to support us.
Thank you, Noreen. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Noreen. We appreciate that. And Shad Khan hopes there you have 75,000 like-minded relatives. Right? And then we'll see you on Sunday as the Houston Texans come to town. We got to take a break. We will come back with this date in football, the Honda drive around the NFL, and we've got Gus Bradley coming your way as well. More phone calls if we can squeeze them in. It's 641-1010 with Jeff Loggeman, with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in 1985, Tony Dorsett became the sixth player in NFL history to rush for 10,000 yards or more as the Cowboys defeated Pittsburgh 27-13 with a win at Texas Stadium. Born on this date in 1942, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones turned 73 years old today. Likewise, arguably the greatest football player of all time, Jerry Rice, turns 53, born on this date in 1962. 13-time Pro Bowler, 10-time first-team All-Pro. We do these all the time, guys, and when we have Hall of Famers come up, I always look because Pro Football Reference lists their Pro Bowls and their first team All-Pro mentions, which is much more exclusive. There's only two wide receivers, for instance, on the first team All-Pro for the league-wide thing. I don't remember a player having more than 10 first team All-Pro mentions. Obviously, Jerry Rice, one of the most heavily decorated players in history. Steve Matthews, a former Jaguar quarterback for one game as a starter, led him to 40 points in 97 logs. You remember that at the time, the highest output in team history.
That was the system.
It must have been. I don't know. He didn't throw a touchdown in the game, but James Stewart and Natron Means each had two touchdown runs, and Mike Hollis kicked four field goals on the way to 40 points as he helped knock off the New York Giants in September of 97. A happy birthday to Brian Dawkins, longtime NFL safety and perhaps one day a Hall of Famer as well. 9 Pro Bowls for him, 4-time first-team All-Pro and a Raines High School graduate here out of Jacksonville. And happy birthday to current Jaguar tight end Nick Jacobs, who turns 24 years old today. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Check out the SomnoMed Custom Fit Snore Guard for you or your loved one. Your loved ones are going to love you. If you've got a snoring issue, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. If you're in the market for a family dentist or you need cosmetic work done, that's the number to call, or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Yeah, Mike, only one other player with double-digit All-Pro selections in their career. That would be Jim Otto of the Oakland Raiders.
Pro Bowl or first-team All-Pro?
First-team All-Pro. He had 10 of them between 1960 and 1974. The current active leader is Peyton Manning, who has had 7 first-team All-Pro selections.
I don't
selections.
Think he's going to make it 8.
It doesn't appear that way right now. It looks like Tom Brady is well on his way to that kind of honor this season. As was feared, Kansas City Chiefs running back Jamaal Charles did tear the ACL in his right knee during his team's game on Sunday. He will miss the rest of the 2015 season. Antonio Gates returned after serving a 4-game suspension last night for the San Diego Chargers. Gates caught his 100th and 101st touchdown passes of his career during the Chargers' last-second loss to the Steelers, who won when Le'Veon Bell stretched the ball across the goal line as time expired on the clock. And the Denver Broncos are reportedly going to hold pass rusher DeMarcus Ware out this weekend against Cleveland. Ware left the Broncos' win against Oakland this weekend with an apparent back injury. Denver has a bye week following their matchup with Cleveland on Sunday, so trying to give Ware a couple weeks to get right.
Great player. That's the type of player that the Jaguars need to find. I mean, you look at Denver's defense right now. They lead the league in takeaways with 14. And put a little perspective, the Jaguars are second from the bottom in the National Football League at takeaways with 3. The worst being the team coming in here this week, the Houston Texans, with 2.
About that.
Yeah, and I think Denver leads the league in sacks, too. I think it's sacks and forced takeaways.
Yeah, they've been amazing, and they score when they get the ball in their hands, too. As case in point, Chris Harris this week with the long interception return against Derek Carr for the touchdown as well. We'll hear a little bit from Gus Bradley coming up here momentarily. A lot of texts coming in. I'll do them in reverse order that they came in because it's easier for me to scan through them this way. Thank God we have a billionaire owner who has vision, perspective, and patience. There are great things on the horizon for this team sooner than you think. These on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. That's from the 904 area code. Another one, we've gone from being blown out in most games last year to being in the game in the fourth quarter with an opportunity to win. An idiot can see the difference in that. And another one, we may be growing, but the rate of growth is not big enough compared to other teams. If the Jags were an investment, could you make an argument to invest in them over other teams? I highly doubt it. You guys hit the nail on the head. If the Colts were the Colts of the past few years, we wouldn't be nearly as ticked as we are now. We had a chance to be leading the division after the Colts game, blown opportunity. Then we looked ahead at Tampa and Houston thinking we could win, and the Colts are playing New England this week. Another chance to be on top of the division, another blown opportunity. It's just frustrating to see success slip through your fingertips, but it's encouraging to even be fighting for a division lead. Hashtag mixed emotions. Another one, people forget that we were warned that the rebuilding process will take several years to compete. Or to complete, I think that should be. The talking heads, national experts are in agreement that Jacksonville is doing it the right way. Another one said, knee-jerk reaction, he's 8-29, referring to Gus Bradley's overall coaching record.
That's easy.
As a head coach of the Jags. It's easy, but it's true.
Easy.
But it's true.
I mean, come on, Mike.
Well, I mean, but you
to sit there and point to one number and sit there and say, okay, let's go ahead and make an opinion based on one number. Really?
It's the most important number in the game, though.
It is the most important number in the game, but the circumstances around it are also important as well.
I understand that. And for those
that sit there and reiterate Gus Bradley's overall record as a grading point or the prominent point of evaluation, I'll put them in the category of illogical or ignorant.
All right. Well, I mean, for them, I'll play devil's advocate here with you a little bit, but you know, they say, hey, we're paying customers. We get it. A year of rebuilding, fine. Another year,
here's one thing that I have a problem with you. You keep saying that I'm a paying customer.
That's what I'm referring to fans as. They're paying customers.
I get that. I understand it. But to keep reiterating that, to me, is like beating a drum senselessly. I mean, we all know.
That's their point of
view,
though.
I'm a paying customer, too. But I don't sit there and say, hey, I'm a paying customer. You know what I mean? I mean, it just sounds wrong.
Does that sound wrong to me?
To me, you use the term fans.
Okay.
Because some are paying, some
right.
aren't.
Well, fans are fans, but I think from the perspective of why, you know, you could be a fan and you could say, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm going to root and hope it does well or whatever. But if you say, look, I you know, I think it, you can differentiate. If you're showing up and you're paying for parking and season tickets and concessions and all these things and you're pumping thousands of dollars in and you feel like you're hearing the same message over and over about how the team is going to improve and learn from their mistakes and you're not seeing that in the one loss record, I can see a direct correlation to why they're a segment of the fan base is frustrated because of that.
Sure.
But right, I mean,
you always refer to something bad happening. You bring up, okay, these are paying fans. When a team wins, do you use the term that these, you know, these are paying fans?
Well, I think the only time.
Paying customers?
Do you use that term
when you talk about it in a positive light? Do you talk about the New England Patriots that the paying customers.
Because they're getting, well, Jeff, no, because they're getting
the money's
worth.
That's my point. I mean, it doesn't work. It's got to work both ways, Mike.
Okay, well, I'll start referring to them all as paying customers, I guess. I mean, because I think.
They're fans. That's all. They're fans.
Right, but not every fan.
They all are fans.
Fine. But, Jeff, don't you think that's where some of the. Thing comes from when you hear players saying, you know, like that fans don't understand some of the intricacies, you know, the kindergarten comment from Blake Bortles, for instance. You've seen some in the last few weeks, Jaguar players getting their back up a little bit about the fans not supporting them as much.
I don't
much.
Have a problem with Blake Bortles said.
Okay, that's fine. But from a fan's perspective,
because you know what?
a guy
that might be, you know, wiring cable in the house. I'd be a kindergartner trying to tell him what his job was.
But if it's your house and you turn on the TV and it doesn't work, are you going to be upset with him? Even though you don't
know
how to do his job?
Yeah, but I'm not going to sit there and refer, you know, to somebody as a kindergartner.
But wouldn't you say I'm paying you good money? You need to get it right.
No, I would say that, look, I expect this to work.
Okay, well, it's just semantics, but I think it would come from the same place. If the guy were showing up at your house and trying to wire your cable
up,
for free.
I'm paying money.
If the guy came to your house to try to wire your cable for free and he did it wrong, maybe you'd say, hey, try to do me a favor. Not going to be upset, but if you're going to pay your good money.
I wasn't referring to money when I brought up the cable point, Mike. I was just talking about the kindergarten comment that Blake Bortles had.
But you can
go back to the money thing if you want to.
I think
we can continue to talk about that, but I don't see why you went back there.
Why? Because I think there are a lot of fans come from that point of view, Jeff.
I know, but that's my point is that, you know, you bring that up as the paying customers.
Because I'm trying to reflect what I hear from the fans. They say, you know what?
Let them reflect it. Do you hear them saying that?
Jeff, I hear it all the time. I'm on this radio station five days a week.
Then let them reflect it.
I can't always do that, okay? I don't have
a direct... you're the voice of the paying customer.
Oftentimes, I pass along what I feel... Jeff, why do you find that funny?
I think it's funny.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think that part of the job here of hosting this show is to take all the tweets I get... I can't read every tweet I get. I can't read every text I get. I can't read every Facebook post I get, but...
You're getting worked up, Mike.
I am, because I can't understand why you can't see that this is... a logical refrain from people that are tired of paying their money and saying, we keep hearing, we're going to learn from this, we're going to learn from this, we're going to learn from this, and they go out there and make a new series of mistakes. I'm not saying every fan feels that way. I'm saying there's a growing segment of the fan base that I hear from all the time, and I do believe it's part of my
all
job.
All the time.
Yes.
I appreciate you representing their concerns.
Okay. I mean, I know you're being sarcastic
now.
No, I'm
not.
You are.
I'm not.
You're absolutely being sarcastic.
You're beating a horse over and over and over.
But you are trying to say...
Mike, let it rest.
No, Jeff, what are you talking about? It's a talk show.
Mike,
we're talking.
Get over it.
I'm not going to get... Jeff, I don't know what you think I'm not over. I just don't understand. You're putting a point of view out saying these fans are unrealistic if they expect, you know, if they're going to point to this record. Well, they're pointing to that record reasons.
Let me go back to bring up what I said. I said if you keep referring to one number as an entire perspective... it's wrong.
Okay.
Okay, based on where this program started a couple of years ago to where it's at now.
I think most people understand that, but after...
That was the point I made. That was it.
I get that, Jeff, but I'm telling you what I hear from people that they're sick of hearing. There's a segment of them. I'm not saying this speaks for everybody.
And as I said before, I understand that feeling. I understand it. Nobody's more tired of having a losing season than me. I'm calling the game every week. Do you think I like to call games that aren't victorious? No.
I get that.
I understand where their perspective is.
But their perspective
is
you're paying to do that.
I don't understand why you constantly refer to the paying customers when it comes to losing. Let's just talk about the losing. and the expectation of where it should be and where it needs to be.
But we're talking as well about the fans' reaction to the losing. And when you say a focus on that number,
Mike, I get it. I understand that.
Oh my goodness!
But the constant reference to the paying customer. You know, I understand
because
that
Jeff,
customers.
I get these references.
I understand that people
from them,
pay
they tell
to come
me
and watch this football team.
Right,
I understand that.
And that, but that is, it's not just a case of when you sit here and you say they're 1-4. They say, no, we're not. I've been buying season tickets. We were 3 wins last year, 4 wins the year before. We've won 9. We've won 10 games in 3+ seasons, mm-hmm. and I've been paying good money, and I hear this all the time. I don't know if I'm going to continue to do this.
That's
I don't
their
know.
Choice.
I know it is, but I'm trying to express their frustration because they can't all call up here one after another and voice that on the air.
If they want to do it, allow them to do it.
I do allow them to do it, Jeff. How do you think that I know about it?
You got the text line and you got the phone lines. Let them express it.
Which I am doing, because do you want me to read every text we get in? Because I could do that, and there are certainly people that bring up that people say, oh, it's only this, it's only that. I've been paying good money. I've been a season ticket holder since whatever. I've been paying X, Y, and Z. It's not cheap to come to these games, and you're asking me to consume your product, and you're not giving me what I'm expecting for my money. I hear it all the time.
Great.
Okay. Well, I understand why you think that's a point I wouldn't bring up.
I understand that you hear it, but you're in today's show, you referred to it about 5 different times, back to back to back
because
to back.
Because I am trying to
we
give
get it,
you
Mike.
The representation.
We get it.
Apparently,
everybody
you
gets it that they spend hard-earned money to come and watch, and they expect more. We get it.
So
we
so
all
shouldn't
it.
That be
I
discussed,
pay money to,
or should
for
we
tickets
just
for the Jaguars
that?
Game as
so
well.
Do I.
Yeah, but I don't bring it up every segment and bring it up 4 times in a segment. There's no reason to do that.
Sure, they feel differently. They're the fans. They can bring up anything they want.
They can, but they're not bringing it up. You are.
They are bringing it up to me, and I feel I am the conduit for the fans to...
I'm glad you feel that you are.
I am. Okay. I feel I'm one of them.
And there's nothing wrong with being a conduit for the fans, but I'm just saying to bring it up in that one segment, and the segment before that, you brought it up like 6 times. We get it. Okay, it's not always just about the money and what their people are paying out of pocket. It's about what people want to see. It's what they feel in their hearts. It's not about necessarily always what they spend. It's about what they want out of their team that represents their city. It goes above and beyond money.
Do you want me to read some of the texts that are coming
in?
I mean,
if it makes you feel better,
fine. Let's move on. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up next. This is 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, been promising you all day we'll hear from Gus Bradley, and we will do just that. What are you laughing at over there?
I'm very entertained by you two. I tweeted out, I was like, I kept wanting to jump in, and I was like, nope, I'm just going to let him go.
We obviously disagree on, and that's fine. And
well, I think, look, if you want to talk about, you don't want to throw out the number with the 8 wins in the last 3 years. I think that to some degree that's fair. If you want to change the perspective, I think for a lot of the fans, it's the 0-2 against Indianapolis and Tampa Bay that is as infuriating, and it makes you want to reference the number with the 8 wins in 3 years.
I totally get that. I mean, nobody was more disappointed in 2 losses to Tampa Bay and Indianapolis than me. And as I said, you know, one of those games you should have gotten, period. If not both of them, I get that.
All right, let's hear from Gus. Blake Bortles injured his shoulder, might not practice tomorrow. I'm trying to think what day it is. Might not practice tomorrow. You, from what you understand, you think it's not...
Well, he referred to it as a grade 1 separation of the throwing shoulder, which is your AC joint. Extremely discomforting, uncomfortable to throw. Is it something that he can't play with? No. And he obviously played the game with it, and it didn't seem to bother him too much. You know, back in the old days, stick a needle in it and let's go. You know, I don't know what the league does now on allowing some of that stuff to happen, but
I think that's how they deal with it in Gainesville right now. Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
That's wrong.
Excuse me. I'm the bad guy.
The Jaguars ended up signing Jeff Toole to the practice squad today.
Yes, they did.
Who was in camp.
Precautionary measure.
It's a practice arm. that's what it is. I don't expect them to sign Jeff Toole to the active roster.
And they had an open spot on the practice squad.
Well, and if all of a sudden for some reason,
right, you've got him
worse,
here.
Then he's ready to go.
All right, this is Gus Bradley talking yesterday about the progress he's seen from Blake Bortles.
He's making better decisions. I'll tell you what, he did. I give him a lot of credit for that. Still some errors, though. Calling a formation wrong in the huddle, with a run play. We end up getting 9 yards, but, those things he's got to correct. The interception, the decision. We ran over a receiver. The defense didn't adjust to it. He went with his reads. He didn't come back. Try to force a throw. So there's some things he's got to clean up. But he's progressing. 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. His poise, I think his body language is very much improved. I think the team is feeling it. He's worked on that. I think, like I said, his poise, his staying true to the reads for the most part, I think it's rising. He is definitely getting better. Definitely getting better. But still, he's just like some of those other guys now. He's got one or two things that he has to take personal responsibility on.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And, the other day, it might have been on the post game, and I brought that up, and someone's like, Blake Bortles just threw for this and that and 4 touchdowns. And I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm not saying
really
he had a
nice
terrible
game.
He had a very good game. But I pointed out there were instances where I saw guys that I thought were open. I thought really early on you had the overthrow to Allen Robinson where he laid out for it. I don't know if Robinson runs through it or if he catches that or not, but they just missed connecting. However you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the more egregious one was a little bit later on, where he rolled right on the play, and Robinson's about 20, 25 yards downfield, and he's got a step and a half. And it seemed like an easy bucket throw, which Blake Bortles has been good at.
Well, on a run and a bucket throw is not easy.
All right, but maybe not easy. I thought it was a throw he should have been able to make.
Yeah, well, I don't really look at the ones you pointed out. The ones that I look at are the ones that were, I don't want to say easy, but that were more obvious. Early in the game, you had a 2nd and 7 bootleg. You try to force it and get greedy to Allen Hurns on the deep route when you had Clay Harbor right in front of you for an easy pitch and catch, which that would have been easy. Clay Harbor probably gets the first down. At the very least, you bring up a 3rd and short. You throw incomplete, you line up 3rd and 7, you take a sack on the next one. That's disappointing. The forced throw to the middle of the field where Mercedes was in double coverage. You had Julius Thomas, who had the linebacker beat, made a marvelous move. He was over the top. Could have put that in there, and that would have been 6. If it wouldn't have been 6, it would have been down inside the 5. The interception to Mercedes Lewis, that's a long throw to make under duress. You never do that. If that's where you – because you're under duress because Toby doesn't get the block, as I referred to.
You bench that one? You throw that one out of bounds? Is that?
No, you just take the sack if you have to, or you just be an athlete and you do what Blake Bortles does and you maybe try to extend the play. But that's also on Toby. Make the block, and then maybe your quarterback sees Allen Robinson running wide open across the middle of the field. But that's the best part. 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, and he has maybe one of his best games. But the most exciting part is the end of the half when you're down. I think it was
27.
And you need a score. He takes him down, 2-minute drill. Puts him in and score. End of the
and
ball.
Not a field goal this
time. And then the end of the ball game, you're down, you need to score twice. You take him down, you have a huge play on 4th down. It was kind of a wing and a prayer throw.
A little bit.
But it was on the money. It worked, right?
Well, it got there.
So you
got
to give him credit for it, and then you have an opportunity with the onside kick to maybe go and tie that thing
honestly,
up.
I thought, the way the offense was moving it, I thought if they could recover that thing, they had a really good chance with about a minute left to go down and do it. But that's
it excites me that that was his 18th start, and to be able to give your team some of those opportunities and the ability to elevate your level of play at critical moments, that's always been a trait that has gotten me excited about him and continues to have me excited about him. The interception, like we said, it could have been better on multiple fronts. The other one we haven't really talked about. I know you guys kind of beat it up yesterday with the Corey Grant thing. I know you weren't really wanting to go there, but I just wanted to go there because Clay Harbor, if he makes that block on George Johnson, the defensive end, maybe that doesn't happen. That doesn't provide an excuse for Corey Grant for fumbling that ball, but Clay Harbor's got to make that block. It's a toss crack. He comes in motion. You block the guy right there. He blocks the guy that Luke Jokel's pulling for, and George Johnson is up the field at 100 miles an hour. And he makes that play happen. And the other problem that I had on that play is that, okay, you just fumbled the ball. Okay, Corey Grant, you just fumbled the ball. You would like to maybe fight for the ball, you know, get a little angry, you know, throw your body around a little bit to maybe make an effort to recover that ball. He's standing there looking as the defensive lineman crosses the goal line. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on, man. You know, show some grit. Okay, and on the onside kick, he's one of the fastest humans on the planet. You know where he was at in the race for the onside kick? It was about number 5. Dan Scuda was beating him. I have a problem with that.
All right.
Yeah, I can understand why you would. Gus Bradley, yesterday addressing the media, also talked about himself. And, look, there was a lot about accountability and what they're going to try to do to get some things fixed here in Jacksonville. But one thing specifically he mentioned is he needs to be more vocal out on the practice field.
I think I can be stronger on the practice field. I do that. I think the players need to feel me that when a situation like that occurs, to hear my voice, offensively, defense, special teams. That's where I take personal responsibility. I don't think I've been as animated on the field when it comes to those issues. So that part, I think you'll see that part change.
All right, what about that?
Should have been hearing his voice before.
Well, that's should it been happening,
you know,
sooner.
And maybe they are, and he's just saying that to maybe I need to do more than what I've been doing, but the player should hear his voice every day in practice. I mean, that's the responsibility of the head coach. You know, the thing that I like the most is that after that game, you could see that he was animated. I want to see more of that.
Let's jump ahead here, Tyler, if we could, to the Bernard Pierce commentary yesterday, where Gus explained the play that we talked about on the punt return, where he was blocking instead of attempting to make a tackle.
It's not a good play at all. I mean, when I saw it, I couldn't believe it. But I know he's in the concussion protocol, and I know after the game, I think, you know, he had concussion symptoms. And so, you know, that's where I'll leave it at that. But the play itself, if you watched it, but, you know.
So did he have the concussion before that play? You don't know?
I don't know. I imagine so.
That play's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he's in the concussion protocol, so it's just unfortunate that he had those symptoms and that play happened.
I kind of said half-jokingly to Tony earlier off the air, if he didn't have them, it was probably a good ploy to say, guys, maybe not feeling a little right in the head today, and we'll check that concussion protocol later in the week. Let me ask you this. This is, got brought up a lot in the post game immediately after the game, got brought up yesterday as well. In fact, that was kind of our theme question. I'm trying to push people there to see what the reaction would be, saying, is there a player or two in particular that you would cut? Because I kept hearing in the post game, they need to make an example of somebody. I know you said during the game, you said you wouldn't put Toby Gerhardt back in the game,
no.
Right? Because he missed that block.
No, you have a play like that. That's not good enough. Go take a seat.
Okay. Until you reach a point maybe where through attrition, you might be the only option you have left, right? I mean, if a bunch of guys get hurt.
No, there's always other options.
Okay. Not putting a running. I guess there are other. So would you be in favor of, and how effective do you find, if this is really a thing, cutting a guy to send a message to the rest of the team? Do you cut a guy to send a message, or do you cut a guy because you think there's another guy out there who can do the job better? Or sometimes is there a guy that is just screwed up so much that whether or not you have a better alternative out there, you just need to say enough is enough?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, this roster is for the most part all relatively new. I think you have to have a player that proves that he's unreliable to where he gets to that point, to where you can't count on him game in and game out.
Is there anyone, I mean, you don't even have to name names if you don't want to. Are there guys that you think are approaching that region right now?
Well, I mean, not yet.
Okay.
You know, but there's probably a couple guys that you got the kind of the watch on, you know, that you're thinking, you know, we'll see how things go. And then we'll see what our options are.
Now, are we talking about for starting jobs, or are we talking about actual place on the roster?
Probably both.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably both. I mean, there's always guys like that.
If you were going to make a roster change, or, you know, who's a backup player right now that you think might, if given the chance, surprise us and do better than what we're seeing on the field right now?
Well, one guy that I would like to have seen stay on the roster, I think would have done a better job, in my opinion, is Jeremiah George than Thurston Armbrister. I thought that he was a better player than John Lotulelei. They didn't feel that way.
Right.
I thought that he would have been a guy that if you did lose Paul Posluszny, he would be able to do a better job than what you got out of Thurston Armbrister. You know, so
I got confused the other day. I was thinking about the. I think I might have even said this on the post game that it was Leroy Reynolds, obviously, that they let go to make room for Tony Washington when Marquise Lee showed up unable to play late in the week
in New England
or questionable, right, in New England. And I think I got that confused with Jeremiah George, who was a preseason casualty.
That's right.
Certainly capable of a lot of verbal mistakes. But is there a guy who's currently on the roster though that? You think, boy, I'd like to see more of him, be it Ryan Davis. We didn't see much out of him this week, but that's a guy who gets mentioned a lot.
I mean, not to put into the category of, you know, potentially being cut. I mean,
I'm talking about now. Give me a guy who maybe you think, I just like, maybe Brian Walters, right, is a guy that when he plays, he makes plays, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns are in danger of losing any playing time. I'm just looking for a guy that's a little bit further down, may not be a starter that, you think deserves more reps because he is, I'm not talking about pushing somebody off the roster, but maybe cutting into somebody else's playing time because this guy may bring you a little something that you're not getting right now.
Yeah, I mean, at some point at the safety position, you're going to need to get the draft pick James Sample in the rotation. And, you know, if you have a game like you had last week and, you know, John Cipri not having a great game, well, that might be, hey, look, you know what? You didn't get it done last week. You proved to be unreliable last week. We're gonna
give the young guy a shot.
We're gonna play James Sample.
See if that looks better with
that
combination.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to be able to do as, you know, as a coach, is to say, okay, if that wasn't good enough, let's take a look at this other guy. If the guy's performance warrants it, I think that James Sample has had some very nice plays. Now, that doesn't mean I'm totally down on Jonathan Cyprian, but that could be an example of sending a message if you're looking
for.
To send a message.
I'm looking for
another guy is, you know, Tyler Shatley. If Tyler Shatley had what I thought was a tremendous preseason. He's got a little bit of a thumb issue right now. If you think that Zane Beatles hasn't been playing well enough and you may be able to get a little bit better, you know, maybe you put Tyler Shatley in.
Well, let's say that happened. Let's say just Beatles twists his ankle this week and couldn't play. What would be the better combination? Can on the left side with Shatley on the right vice versa?
This week I'm leaving A.J. Can on the right side. I thought A.J. played a very good game.
Because of J.J. Watt being on that side?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because J.J.'s a left side guy. Now, right. He flip-flops and he will be on both sides. Would not be surprised to see them line him up over on Luke Jokel.
Did you watch a Thursday night game, by the way?
I watched it on film yesterday.
I mean, did the Colts do anything unique, or did they just do a good job? It looked like to me.
Did a great job on J.J. Watt.
They did, and it looked like to me at times you saw Dwayne Allen coming in and giving a quick chip and rolling out, and they're still double-teaming him. Was it a constant double-team?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was either two tight ends or it was a back chipping with an offensive lineman. Sometimes it was singled. You know, typical game for J.J. Watt, he has what I call, you know, six statistical impact plays, whether that be sack, tackle for a loss, batted pass, whatever that may be, a hurry. But I don't want to put hurries into that category because it's not really necessarily statistic at the end of the game. But he would have 12 impactful plays throughout the course of a regular game. You know, the statistical ones plus the ones that, you know, maybe he hurried or he screwed up a blocking scheme. He doesn't make the tackle but allows somebody else to make an easy tackle. And he was, might have been the least impactful game I've ever seen him have. And that's not a great offensive line in Indianapolis. So hopefully it stays that way. I'd leave A.J. Can there.
All right, we got to take a timeout. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Logman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, for everyone saying we need to hug it out, we're good, man. It's okay.
We're always good.
We're not coming to blows, man. Again, people are going to have passionate disagreements over things they care about. And
if we did have to come to blows, this would be the right location.
If we did have to come to blows, it's been nice
tight.
Knowing you.
It's pretty tight here.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I don't have any speed. But I don't want to get in a little tiny ring with you either. You know, I don't think that's to my advantage. I think
we're probably have another shoulder pop out.
You know what? We'll go. It's a verbal ring, and at times we're going to disagree, and we're going to express that. And
Jeff Lagerman has shared his different injuries over the years. Mike,
doesn't help.
You can go after him. You got to.
I know where to go.
Hit me anywhere. You're going to hit
shoulders
one of them.
And knees.
Tony, if either one of my knees were quick enough to get to him, I might give it a shot, but not at that stage. Today, we asked you, trying to get off the malaise a little bit, the doom and gloom. You look around the NFL, there are, I believe, six undefeated teams right now at 5-0. And well, actually, I guess Carolina 4-0 because they had their bye. But you get the point. Which one of those has been the most impressive? I've seen votes for at least every team. Tell me, give me a representative sample of what we got on Twitter today.
Here's what we got from Clarence. The Patriots, always those dang Patriots, from Daniel Bingles and the Red Rocket. But can they do it when it matters most, the postseason? From Duval Doom, what does undefeated even mean? And who can bring themselves to watch other teams' games? From Michael, I'm impressed how the Patriots have found new ways to cheat and apparently not miss a beat. From Ocho Fisho, Carolina, no Benjamin, no Kuechly for 3.5 games and chugging along. Kuechly, by the way, cleared from the concussion protocol today, so he should be back on the field this weekend for Carolina. Joey, Patriots, they might go 16-0 again. If they cheat, we all should. Hashtag unstoppable. From Bill, can't stand the hated stinking Pats, so I'll stay the Broncos for winning close games. From Demetrius, Cincinnati, they've successfully built through the draft these past few seasons, and it's starting to show. From Chris, Tom, terrific in the Pats. And from Love Hyphen, they said the Bold City Brigade tailgate. Did you see what they did in Tampa? They were great.
They were great, and they are
undefeated.
I wish
I could have been there.
I wish it was a long way away. I heard it was quite a hike through the wrong side of the stadium. You know what I mean? Like, to the tip of the entrance you go in, it was on the other side, and then a good ways from there.
I was actually going to go out there and do the pregame TV, and then go out there and do .com pregame.
Right.
But I said, I'm not doing that unless you guys find out, one of two things happen. You can find out how long it's going to take me to do that and which gate I have to enter and exit from, and if there's a golf cart available.
That's key. Lamb would have hooked you up. He knows a golf cart in every market by this stage. Quickly on Facebook, got one for Atlanta from Shea Squires. Atlanta, new coach. Looks like the Jags took the wrong bald coordinator from the Seahawks, he added. A lot of votes for the Bengals. A lot of votes for the Pats here as well. They probably got the most today, but everybody got at least one vote. To me, the Bengals have been the most impressive. I know New England is extremely impressive, and they may be the better team. Nobody mentioned the Packers, by the way. Right?
No.
That is the one team that didn't get a single vote. The Bengals, to me, though, Jeff, just because now they're winning a game in the fashion that they're able to come back against Seattle, who's clearly a good team, but they're struggling a little bit right now. I know it's only the regular season, and Andy Dalton's career will be written by if he has some success in the postseason. But they've been the most impressive team to me.
Very impressive because they have built through the draft, and it has taken a while for them to get to that point. The Bengals fans have been very long-suffering. To me, if you had to pick one from each conference, I mean, clearly the Patriots, and then from the NFC, another team that's built through the draft, the Green Bay Packers.
Right.
They've done a marvelous
job.
Didn't
sign a single free agent, I don't believe, this season. And I want to say that, 50 out of 53 guys.
You can do that when you have an Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, right. I mean, you can build through the draft if you draft the right guys and you have the quarterback. Certainly. All right. Jeff Lagerman at Logs 56. We're going to get out of here a little bit early today because at the top of the hour, XL Primetime is going to bring you to Steve Spurrier's believed to be farewell press conference in Columbia, South Carolina today. So I'm sure plenty of reaction to that afterwards. More on the Jags throughout the course of the day, more on the Will Greer situation, and a lot more that's going on in the world of sports. Thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. They're our Tuesday sponsor. Glad we could bring you some of the thoughts of Gus Bradley. For Fat Tony, for Jeff Lagerman, I'm Mike Dempsey. Have a great day, everybody. XL Primetime next. Steve Spurrier at the top of the hour here on 1010XL 92. 2.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!